Nada. Nama.
Nama. Obeisances. Anirudhaya. 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 Shikesha. Master of the senses.
Master of the senses.
Vriyadhani.
Vriyadhani.
Director of the senses.
Director of the senses.
Nama.
Nama.
Obeisances. Vamahamsaya. Under the Supreme Perfect. Purnaya.
Purnaya.
Under the Supreme Complete. Vriyadhani. Situated apart from this material creation. Advaita Maya Lord, as the Supreme Directing Deity knows, Anirudha, I am the master of the senses and mind. I therefore offer my obeisance unto you again and again. You are known as Ananta as well as Sankarsan. Guess your ability to destroy the creation by the blazing fire from your mouth. Purport, Hrishikesh, Indriyatmane, the mind is the director of the senses, and Lord Anirudha is the director of the mind. In order to execute devotional service, one has to fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, Lord Shiva prays to the control of the mind, Anirudha, to be pleased to help him engage his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita, Manvana Bhavamapato Majajima Bhavasuru, the mind has to be engaged in meditation of the lotus feet. In order to execute devotional service. As also stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mantasvati, Yanamapoanamcha, when the Lord comes, remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Thus, if the Lord, Anirudha, is pleased, can help the mind engage in the service of the Lord. It is also indicated in this verse that Lord Anirudha is the sun god by virtue of his expansions. Since predominantly due to the sun's expansion, Lord Anirudha, Lord Shiva also prays to the sun god in this verse. Lord Krishna in his quadruple expansion, Vasudeva Sankarsan, Pradyumna Anirudha is the Lord of psychic action, namely thinking, feeling, willing, and acting. Lord Shiva prays Lord Anirudha as the Sangha, who is the controlling deity, the external material elements which constitute the construction of the material body. According to the Vishnu Chakravarti Chakra, the word Paramahamsa is also another name for the Sangha. The sun god is addressed here as Nirvidahamane, which indicates that he always maintains the various planets by manipulating the rainfall. The sun god evaporates water from the seas and oceans and then forms the water into clouds and distributes it over land. When there is sufficient rainfall, grains are produced, and these grains maintain living energies in each and every planet. The sun god is also addressed here as Purna or complete, because the rays emanating from the sun have no end. For millions and millions of years since the creation of the universe, the sun god has been supplying heat and light without diminution. The word Paramahamsa is applied to persons who are completely cleansed. When there is sufficient sunshine, the mind remains clear and transparent. In other words, the sun god helps the mind, other living energy, become situated in the platform of Paramahamsa. Thus, Lord Shiva prays to Anirudha to be kind unto him, so his mind will always be in the perfect state of cleanliness and will be engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Just as fire sterilizes all unclean things, the sun god also keeps everything sterilized, especially dirty things within the mind, thus enabling one to attain elevation to the platform of spiritual understanding. My Lord, as the Supreme Directing Deity, known as Anirudha, the Master of the Senses and Mind, and the Rock, my obeisances unto you again and again. You are known as Ananda, as well as Sankarsan, because your ability to destroy the whole creation, but in the blessing of fire from the mouth. So, in the previous verse, the Sankarsan and Pradyumna were mentioned. Here we can find Anirudha. So as I mentioned, they are actually expansions. Their expansions are the forms of Mahavishnu, Bhagavad Vishnu, and Shirdakshad Vishnu, who enter into the material world and supervise everything from the largest to the smallest. And they're also in charge of the various aspects, such as the mind, intelligence, and the senses, etc., within the human body. So they are an overseer of these particular functions. So devatas are also involved, such as chandra for the mind and realm of more intelligence. But above them, we have the Aniruddha, Shankarshan, Pradumna, etc., supervising everything. So in this way, the Supreme Lord is able to supervise the functioning of the living entities in the material world. So here, Aniruddha is addressed as Hrishikesha Indriyamane, that he is in charge of the senses of the living entity. The senses, if the living entity doesn't have senses, he can't get knowledge, he can't do activities, he can't enjoy, he can't do anything. So the senses are useful for the living entity for enjoyment of the material world, sustaining the body, etc. So even the simplest creatures have some sort of sense. They may only have the smell sense or maybe the taste sense. Later on they develop eyes and things like this. And so gradually when all the senses are there, that living entity is able to perceive things more perfectly. So in this way, we get higher and lower living entities with different types of senses, different amounts of senses develop. And then along with this we get the mind developing and that whole mind intelligence. When we come to the human species, then we find there's a balance with the mental development as well as the senses develop. So the human body is favorable for enjoyment and also for knowledge. Of course one can use the knowledge to enjoy more. Or we can use knowledge in another way, that is for spiritual advancement. So there are actually two functions of matter, vidya and avidya. Vidya is also a function of matter, which is manifest in sattva-gun. And avidya is manifest in tamo-gun. So these are qualities of inherent in property itself. Therefore the mind and intelligence and the senses can either be directed towards avidya or vidya in the material world. They're limited. They don't have spiritual perception as such because they're material things. So the human being therefore has a choice of how to apply his senses and mind and intelligence, etc. He can do it either in avidya or vidya. Most people choose avidya because they find that very enjoyable. But those who are more sattvic will go for vidya, and then they will try to understand atma. So these are the senses supplied to the living entity. So he can do two things, stay in the material world to enjoy, or understand his atma and get out. So the senses and mind function for the human being in two ways, bondage and liberation. So the Lord does not condemn the living entity in the material world. It is possible for the living entity to get out of the material world also. However, we see that most living entities are covered by avidya, and even Krishna says that it's very difficult to get out of the material world. Duraya. Very, very difficult to get on your own. So on his own, the jiva gets stuck and he has to stay in avidya. Very, very difficult to advance beyond that. So the Lord supplies various means by which the jiva can advance. That is, he supplies knowledge in the form of the Vedas. He comes as avatar and he sends devotees to act as his agents. And they can enlighten the jivas in the material world and give them proper knowledge. And then they can use their senses properly, the mind properly, etc. Then they can go for vidya and go beyond that even and get bhakti. So the Lord is controlling all this. Because the jiva wants to employ the senses in one way, the Lord allows that. He supplies all the desires of the living entities in the material world. So he doesn't prevent the senses from acting in certain ways. He supplies everything to the jiva according to how the jiva wants to enjoy. ultimately he's in control, but he lets the jiva function in this way. So the examples given in the Upanishads, like Svetasara Upanishad, Kapta Upanishad, of the Supreme Lord, he is like one bird in the tree, and the jiva is the other bird, and the jiva is enjoying the fruit of the tree. The other bird is not enjoying the fruit of the tree, he's looking. So he doesn't interfere, he looks, not observes. But more than that, of course, he actually is the one who supplies everything for that jiva, and he helps him enjoy in the material world by supplying everything he needs. He lets his senses activate, he supplies everything in the material world to him, and then the jiva chooses to act in this way. So the Lord does not interfere with that. It is difficult for the jiva to get out because there's a covering of avidya. But built into material nature itself, of course, is vidya. So one can, in the material world, actually come to the level of realizing I'm not the body, I'm the soul. That much we can do. Beyond that, difficult. Right. So we can get up at that stage, atma jnana, which is subject. So the Lord is there, and then he supplies for guidance to the living entity, because he is the master of all these different functions of mind, intelligence, etc. If one has devotion by grace of the Lord and by association with devotees, etc., then the Lord is attracted to the devotee, so the Lord can help. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I give you the intelligence by which you can come to me. So for the devotee, the Lord acts in a different way than he acts for the other jivas in the material world. So he supplies them intelligence and mind, and engages their senses properly. So this is with the mercy of the Supreme Lord. He helps the devotee engage in this way. Of course, for those who are doing jnana and yoga, to some degree, of course, he is helping also, but not to the same degree that he does for the devotee. And therefore, in chapter 12 of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says very quickly, the devotee is delivered from this material world. He doesn't say that about the jnani or the yogi or the karmi, but this is for the devotee. Why? Because the Lord is actually helping the jiva in all of his functions. Of course, we must understand that in the process of bhakti, ultimately the senses and the body, etc., are secondary because they're material. And the only spiritual aspect of the jiva is the jiva within the body. That is spiritual by nature. And, of course, the jiva has a tendency to be an enjoyer of the material world. It's covered by avidya. But, if that jiva develops a little faith, this becomes the means by which he can develop further. In other words, the soul can begin to get rid of that avidya through the development of bhakti and the jiva. And by doing that, when he engages his senses with the help of the Lord, then the effect is different. It does not create enjoyment in the material world, it destroys karma, it destroys all the bad effects, and it creates more bhakti in the jiva. So that is the effect of the process of bhakti. That is the spiritual shakti of the Lord, which gradually grows within the jiva and influences the senses and the mind, etc. So in this way, the senses can be used for the Supreme Lord, etc., even though they are material, so they are spiritualized by the bhakti, which is residing in the jiva. And at a certain point, then all of these things, the senses and the mind and all these things and the body, etc., are given up. But that doesn't mean that Jiva doesn't have any senses, etc. He also has senses. And those develop as the bhakti develops. So therefore, it is with the spiritual body, with spiritual senses, that one can perceive the Lord, not material senses. So the spiritual senses develop through the process of bhakti. If we don't do bhakti, we don't develop spiritual senses. So therefore we can't perceive God. Even if we get liberation, we don't perceive anything. There's no senses to perceive anything. So with the process of bhakti, spiritual senses, spiritual body develop, and then we can see the Supreme Lord. So these material functions have no importance for the jivas perceiving the Supreme Lord. But in the process of sadhana, very useful, because by engaging the senses and the mind and the intelligence, etc., in sadhana bhakti, the bhakti in the atma increases and increases and develops. So this is how the process of bhakti works. So in this process, gradually the jiva develops the spiritual senses, and the material senses are even less important. When the spiritual senses are fully developed, they didn't give up the material body and serve the Lord without any problem in the spiritual body.
No. But then, but unlike when we realize Krishna, then we need to be liberated.
Yeah, well, liberation means not the body, Atma or Brahman or whatever. That's all. Vague conception of God. I'm not the body, I'm consciousness. That's the realization.
You see something, when they get liberation, I forget that. I mean, anyway, you say something about coming to the material. Liberation means one has to come to the continuous world.
Yeah, liberation means beyond the body. Devotees are liberated, and gyanis can get liberation also. But, of course, devotees' liberation is different because they have a spiritual body, a spiritual senses. Gyanis don't.
Why is the soul is unchangeable, but it develops senses,
Yeah, the certain aspects of the jiva are unchangeable, just like the Lord is unchangeable. So certain things, characteristics, are unchangeable in the jiva. But we have, for instance, his qualities of eternity and consciousness and dependence on the Lord and ability to perceive objects, etc., knowledge, to gain knowledge. These are some eternal things. And then there is some things which are changeable. So perception is changeable, for instance, that you see this or you see that or whatever. So the jivas participating in Krishna's pastimes, they are perceiving different things at different times. So there is a change in the jiva at that point, in one sense, in his perception. So there is some changeable aspects in the jiva and some not. As far as the body is concerned, of course there's a little controversy about that. How, what is that spiritual body and where is it? But ultimately, it cannot be temporary, because anything spiritual must be permanent, nitya. So therefore, ultimately the spiritual body of the jiva is eternal. So it's not produced. Where is it? That's a controversy. Is it with Krishna in the spiritual world, or is it sitting around the jiva or whatever? In any case, it is not manifested for the jivas in the material world, and it doesn't manifest for the gyanis, that much we know. It manifests for the devotees in the spiritual world. But it is not a creation of matter. It's not a creation that has a beginning and end. It's eternal. Eternally existing with the Lord.
Even like the spiritual body, even in this body.
Huh?
Yeah. Not like the senses and mind that
Yeah. Well, anyone who performs devotional service, when you perform devotional service, then the senses are not acting in the same way because they don't produce karma. So in that sense, they're spiritualized.
So when we leave the body, the subtle body stays back. What is it?
Yeah.
Spiritual.
Done. No, it's not spirit. It's still just like this body spiritualized also when we do emotional service. Subtle body also spiritualized, but they're all material still. They're still material. They didn't change from matter to spirit. They're spiritualized, and they give no material effects. But they're not. They're constitutionally different, so they're left behind. Otherwise, you go to the spiritual body with this body. Same form, you go to the same form. But then, if you're a cowherd boy, what do you do? If you're a gopi, what do you do? Because you got this form, you wouldn't fit in. So you can't take forms from this world. Even in the spiritual sense, gradually develop the jiva with growing bhakti. The jiva is already spiritual, full of knowledge from this wide being to be developed. Well, as I said, it's not manifest. Nothing is manifest. And if you don't do bhakti, it's never manifest. So it's as good as not being there in one sense, even though it's eternal.
So when we go, right, when we go back to the spiritual world, we leave the subtle body.
Yeah.
But even to engage in devotion, it should be spiritual.
Yeah.
Like
spiritualized. Should be spiritualized, like the gross body. They're both material things. Mind is material. Just like the material body. And they're spiritualized because of bhakti. But nevertheless, they're given up by the jiva because they're material. So nothing material can enter the spiritual realm.
It means that once spiritualized, that it's not can't properly perform the appeal.
Hmm?
Go back to the meditative consciousness, the subtle body. Once it is spiritualized, there's always chance of going back.
Well, if we engage in material activities, then immediately you get material effects. If you do spiritual activities, you get spiritual effects, that's all.
Maharaj, if there is an eternal spiritual form, then which means sadhana, is in the process of making a spiritual body. But then these two things don't fit. It is already an existing spiritual body. And sadhana is there to develop spiritual senses.
Mm-hmm.
Which means the kind of path is predetermined. And the spiritual, there is a spiritual body which is eternal.
Mm-hmm.
But sadhana helps one jiva to develop spiritual senses.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, but the goal is already fixed, what form will attain.
Yeah, which you attain by your sadhana.
So, which means that the goal of sadhana is already predetermined?
Not really. If you choose that particular sadhana, then you get that body. Why not? The body's eternal still. Doesn't mean you had it before, but it's there somewhere. It's eternal.
But this body is made of material elements.
No.
So the subtle body becomes spiritualized.
Yeah, it's also material. Subtle body is material. Yeah.
But
when you do devotional service, it's spiritualized, but it's still material. Mind is mind, water is water, fire is fire. And you have to leave them when you go to the spiritual world because they're material elements. Don't take your material mind with you. Take your spiritual mind with you.
But if subtle body is spiritualized,
The subtle body is only acting because the Atma is there, and the Atma has the bhakti, not the subtle body.
Maharaj,
in
Upanishad, text 11, it says that one used to develop both Vidya and Avidya. So, how do we understand that? Because
well, there's different interpretations of that verse. Every acharya has a different interpretation of what that means. Vidya, Avidya, karma and jnana, or whatever. Do karma and jnana together rather than singly, or things like that. It's all different interpretations. Yeah. Before Vyasadeva, they weren't written down at all in the day of Brahma. They're simply spoken. And when Pralaya takes place, everything disappears. You don't see them anymore.
Leave it like that, you have to do some effort for it to...
Well, yeah, those who are not interested may be neutral, or they may be demonic, or whatever, or they may be favorable, maybe a little bit favorable. So if there's neutral or a little favorable, if one associates with them more and more, they become a little more favorable, and then they can listen. If they're demonic, generally they cannot listen, so therefore you don't preach to the demonic. To the innocent or the favorable, you can preach.